The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
If you're on your way to work today, you're one of 10.6 million Australians who are out earning a dollar working. Let me see, I've got the stats here on the screen. This is from the 2016 census. 10.68 million Australians working. About two-thirds of us have full-time work, 62%, and around 36% work part-time. As I've looked at working hours over the last, well, I suppose 20 to 30 years, the average hasn't changed much. But what's tended to happen is there's more part-time work, and at the same time, those who work full-time are working longer hours. So here's an article, the 38-hour week, a rarity among full-time workers. At the moment, around 5 million of the 7.7 million full-time workers work more than 40 hours a week. I think the average is around 44 hours. So more part-time work, those full-time working longer. We're also on our way to working more and more on the weekends. In fact, we're on our way to a seven-day-a-week economy. How many of us work? And by the way, this isn't meant to make you feel guilty if you work weekends. I know it's a necessity for many people, police and fire and nurses, etc., etc. There's 2.75 million Australians, so around about a quarter of the workforce work on weekends, on a typical weekend. Why do we do it? Well, it puts an extra $14 billion a year into pay packets. So you can see there's a lot of economic reason for employers and employees. Now, I'm old enough, as I look around, some of you are old enough to remember before the seven-day economy. I remember growing up, and this is, please, no cheap shots about the Grafton where I grew up, but I remember growing up, Saturday lunchtime, bang, everything would kind of just close and then there would be nothing happen again until Monday morning. Things did happen in Grafton occasionally, but nothing happened again until Monday morning. It was kind of a reset button. Now we're moving more and more to, well, the weekend is disappearing. Now it's convenient and there's lots of dollars involved, but it does come, I'd put it to you today, it does come at a cost. And the cost, well, it's interesting. I found a book just last week. I haven't had a chance to buy it or read it, by Katrina Onstad, called The Weekend Effect. She's a Canadian journalist. I haven't got to read it, but the good news is that she was interviewed on a Canadian news website. And the title of her book, the title of her book, The Weekend Effect, The Life-Changing Benefits of Taking Time Off and Challenging the Cult of Overwork. So the news, the interview that they did with her, how the weekend has disappeared and why we need to take it back. Now, the interviewer asked this journalist who's done research, etc., on it, asked her, why is the weekend disappearing or why are we overworking? Her answer was fairly predictable. Technology, it used to be that when you finished work, you finished. Now, with mobile phones, laptop computers, you can work 24/7 and work follows you around. She also mentioned in Canada the shrinking influence and power of the union movement, which I suspect is the same here. And the other factor she gave was the idea of insecure work, that more and more is contract work, short term, and so there's more pressure in the workplace and outside the workplace to perform. But what I found interesting in the interview, she talked about the cost of overwork and the weekend disappearing. She said this, on a personal level, we know that our bodies suffer from overwork and lack of leisure. Anxiety, mental health issues. We're not designed to work more than, now some of you who are lawyers may smile about this, we're not designed to work more than 40 hours a week. She's saying there's a line there somewhere. And then our systems wear out and the quality of our work suffers. After 50 hours a week, it crashes and burns. Now you put your own hours in there, but there is a line somewhere. Now what she said about a society though, this, but on a societal level, what happens to community when people don't have time to gather or connect in person, not just over social media? Not having time off becomes a public interest issue. It means the erosion of social bonds, less civic contribution and participation. Loneliness is on the rise in North America, and certainly in Australia too, from what I read in the media and see with people. We find ourselves too busy for true connection and prioritising work over life. Now, a quick Google search around the media, etc., and there's lots of stuff around. Here's an article by Matt Wade from the Sydney Morning Herald. Why a get-together on weekends is good for well-being. And he's quoting, once again, two Canadian economists who did a study. Now, this will surprise you. They found that people have much more happiness, much less worry, sadness and anger on Saturdays and Sundays than they do during the week. Okay? Thank you, Captain Obvious. But it's the society findings that they had. Listen to what the economist said. It was not the opportunity to sleep in or read a book that made the difference for people being happier on weekends. It was time for, quote, valuable interactions with friends and family, which happened much more on weekends than any other time. Her analysis shows that when people miss out on seeing others on the weekend because they are working, they tend not to make up that time socialising at other times during the week. Dr. Craig said, it's not like you can say it doesn't matter when you have your leisure time. It just means you spend more time alone. It's much harder for people having a day off when most others are working or at school to get together with larger groups like extended family. Now, once again, it's not to make you feel guilty if you work weekends. I'm just saying that that moving to the seven-day economy is a cost for many people and a cost for us as a society. And all of that to help you to think through the wisdom of a commandment that God gave to the people of Israel about 3,500 years ago. And that would be the fourth commandment, which we're going to look at today. In terms of context, the Ten Commandments, I don't know if you're not familiar with the Bible, the Ten Commandments come after God has used the great prophet Moses to bring the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt about 1400 BC, brings them out of Egypt after the 10 plagues, the Passover, etc., brings them to Mount Sinai, and after he's rescued them, after they've become his people, he gives them the Ten Commandments, which are a pattern for how they are to live as his people. And so at our lunchtime meetings called Bible Shots, we've been working through the Ten Commandments. I thought now is an opportunity to pick up, and we'll do perhaps the middle five of them. The Ten Commandments basically work, and by the way, if you can list the Ten Commandments, you are amazing. I've never met anybody who can. You can, Lisa? I'll check you later. You are the one then. Well done. Well done. There's one about pride, I think, there somewhere, but... You've got a jingle. Okay, I'll have to learn that. Okay, very good. You're the one. The Ten Commandments. The first commandment about loyalty and service of only the true God. The second commandment about how to relate to that God, not through images or statues, but only his words. The third commandment about how to carry or represent the name of God. We come today to the fourth commandment about remember God gives a pattern of work and rest. Now, I had always thought of the Ten Commandments as the first four being about how to relate to God, and then the next six about personal obligation or how to relate to other people. But I think I'm thinking it through. I think there's a good case that the first three are about how to worship or serve the true God. The next seven, from four through to ten inclusive, are about the obligations on people to make society function well. And notice they're not about rights, it's not a bill of rights, it's a bill of obligations of how to respond to other people. And so today we'll look at, remember God gives a pattern of work and rest, and then honour father and mother, and I've got a few unusual insights I think on that next week, and then we'll work through murder, adultery. I think we'll get five done in terms of how the term works out. Okay, so the fourth commandment, the pattern of work and rest. And now, remember, I'll say a little more about the New Testament in a moment. Remember, this is God's command to ancient Israel. These are written on stone. This is how they were to behave. All right, the fourth commandment begins, and it's on the left-hand side of your program. Let's have a look at it. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Now, the word Sabbath, or Shabbat, I think is the pronunciation, means to cease, to stop working, to celebrate, to rest. I have Jewish friends. One young guy who's a Pilates physio and is keeping my more than middle-aged body still functional and have a run now and then. I see him on a Friday afternoon. I think I'm the last customer of the week, and he's very happy to push me out the door because his Shabbat starts sunset on Friday through to sunset Saturday, and he loves it. quality time with his family. I can see that he's looking forward to it. When I see him on a Sunday morning, he's refreshed. He still celebrates Shabbat. And notice, though, it said, remember it. Remember it. It's easy to forget, easy to overwork. And keep it what? Holy, meaning separate, different. This time, in a way, is to be celebrated. It belongs to God. Then you see something you may take for granted, but is very profound. The commandment goes on to say about a pattern of work and rest. Let's talk about work first. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work. The Bible as a culture in the ancient world is very unusual in that it actually celebrates work as a good thing. Many of the ancient cultures, the Romans and others, despised work as being somehow beneath people. If you could stop, you would. But in Genesis chapter 2, for example, God creates the man and the woman and puts them into the garden to what? To work it, to care for it. Work is a good thing. And then, of course, in chapter 3, they ignore God, they disobey him, they walk away, and everything is messed up, including work. And the promise is that work, the land will now bring thorns and thistles. Work will be difficult and frustrating. Not always. A book of Ecclesiastes does say, if you can enjoy your work, it's the gift of God. So if you can head off to work today and think, woohoo, then be thankful to God, okay? My guess is there's still a lot of thorns and thistles. But, okay, so there's a pattern of work, but here's what the commandment particularly stresses, rest. Here we go, from verse 10. But the seventh day is a Sabbath, a Shabbat, to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son, your daughter, your male or female servant, your animals, or any foreigner residing in your towns. My guess, if you may be like, man, that is just take the seven-day week for granted. But there's many cultures. All you need to go to Wikipedia and look up the work week. Many different cultures have had different to seven-day weeks. So the Egyptians divided their months into 30 days, and they had 3 10-day weeks. Other cultures have had different length days. One thing I was surprised to find out was that even in the Soviet Union, in 1929, they began what they called the eternal calendar, which seems to be some kind of throwback to what they tried to come up with after the French Revolution. But the eternal calendar had 12 30-day months, and those months were divided into 6 weeks of 5 days. And the Soviet Union persevered with that until 1940, but they stopped. Basically, people just ignored it and kept working on the 7 days. They could not herd the cats into line, and they just went back to the Gregorian calendar. And do you notice who the commandment is given to? The commandment is given to the head of the house. The commandment's given to the boss. And it's saying to the boss, the head of the house, you rest, and then you make sure that your sons, your daughters, your servants, your animals, and even the foreigners get to rest as well. The reason it's given to the boss is that it's the duty of the boss to rest and then make sure everyone further down the food chain is able to rest, even the animals. Now, this pattern of work and rest was actually built into ancient Israel at a very deep level so that they were to plough their fields and grow crops 6 years in a row, and then the seventh year the field was to lie fallow so that even the land got a rest. Now today, I guess still in academia, you do your 6 years, and then the seventh year you get a rest to go and read and learn, and it's called a sabbatical, is where it comes from. And then seven in Israel, seven lots of seven, 49 years, the 50th year was to be the year of Jubilee when everyone got a fresh start. That's perhaps for another time. But why were they to do that? Well, to not work one day in seven, in one sense, costs. It's 14% of your productive time. Why were they to do it? It was an act of trust that God could take care of them, that they would have everything they need, that they could stop work and actually enjoy the good things that God had given them. Now, on your sheet, I'll just go very quickly through this. The Ten Commandments are actually... Oh, no, sorry. Why are they to do that? It's built into creation. It's built into creation. Notice the end of the commandment says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So it's built into creation. The way that God made the world is this pattern of work and rest, six and seven, etc. We'll come back to that in just a moment. What I find interesting is that the Ten Commandments are given twice in the Bible, 40 years apart. They're given here at Mount Sinai, and then in the book of Deuteronomy, they're given again just before Israel enters the Promised Land. And the only thing to change in the Ten Commandments is the motivation for keeping the fourth commandment. I've put it on your sheet on the left-hand side. The first time they're given, it's about creation. The second time we said, remember that in Deuteronomy 5:15, remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Why should they rest? Well, God had redeemed or rescued them from being slaves. Why? So they could rest. When you were in Egypt and the slave masters whipped you, there were no RDOs. Okay, you worked all the time. Now, God has rescued you so you don't have to work 7 days a week. So the Sabbath was built in, if you like. The Sabbath was a weekly reminder of God their creator and God their redeemer or rescuer. It's a beautiful pattern that's built in. So God took this very seriously. How seriously? In ancient Israel, if you deliberately broke the Sabbath, it carried a death penalty. That's pretty serious. Okay, so enjoy it, I guess, or else. But it was a pattern of being able to enjoy this, and it mattered. Now, if you step back and see the bigger picture that the Bible's giving, the Sabbath points to physical rest, but also the idea of spiritual rest, of being in somewhat communion with God, perhaps. So let's go back to creation. In Genesis chapter 2, if you think, okay, now there's this beautiful, what I think is poetic description or poetic way of showing creation. The high point of creation is not the creation of the man and the woman. God creates humanity in his image on day 6. On day 7, you get to the high point, which is what? By the 7th day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the 7th day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the 7th day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating he had done. So the 7th day is the idea of, yes, God's created humanity, and then the 7th day God rests and they are able to actually enjoy the good things he's made. So to know God, to enjoy his good creation, rest, peace, joy. That's the high point, being able to enjoy it, if you like. And that's the way we're made, to be able to enjoy rest. That's what the Sabbath is, God's pattern for that. Now, I don't know what your idea of the perfect day off is. You can fill in the gap. For me, I remember my most beautiful days of rest where we'd go to the beach up near where I grew up with our kids and spend the morning in the surf dragging boogie boards out, turning them around and letting the kids shoot into the beach, come home, have lunch, put the kids to sleep or threaten them with stay in their room, and then the test match cricket would be on and I'd lie on the couch and fall asleep in front of the cricket. It's just a beautiful thing. Now you fill in your nothing puts you to sleep like test match cricket. Anyway, but that you fill in the gap. For 1300 years, Israel more or less was to celebrate the Sabbath, and then the Sabbath pointed to a bigger thing, and that is what Jesus would do when he arrived. Now, unfortunately, by the time that Jesus arrived, the religious leaders of the day had turned the Sabbath into a terrible, detailed, legalistic burden for people with hundreds of nitpicking rules and so on. And Jesus was constantly in conflict with them, saying, no, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, and that he was the one that could say how the Sabbath would be kept. It's a constant theme through the Gospels. Now, Jesus dies and takes the penalty of the wrongdoing that humanity's done, dies in our place so that we can be forgiven. And the New Testament picks that up, the idea of him bringing spiritual rest. The New Testament talks about the promised land in the Old Testament symbolising spiritual rest. And it's a picture of Jesus can give people rest and the promise of heaven, the idea of spiritual rest with God. What the New Testament explains is that all of the Sabbaths and the special days in the Old Testament were just metaphors, acted out pictures for what Jesus would do in terms of bringing spiritual rest. Let me show you. In the book of Colossians, the Apostle Paul says this. The Christians in Colossae, now a town in what would be modern-day Turkey, they believed in Jesus. Other people had come along and said, oh, great to have trust in Jesus, but you need to keep all these Old Testament rules as well. And Paul says, no, 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 no. Don't let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or what, a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. So it just pointed to the rest that Jesus would bring. All right. Now, what about if you're a follower of Jesus? I know not necessarily all of us are, but if you're a follower of Jesus, what does the New Testament do with the idea of the Sabbath, etc.? Many Christian people feel very strongly about the Sabbath, one way or another. And so let me tiptoe through the minefield and we'll see. I can't see anywhere where the New Testament tells Christians that they have to, followers of Jesus, that they now have to keep the Jewish Sabbath. In the New Testament, the followers of Jesus begin to meet on the first day of the week, not the seventh day of the week. They meet on Sunday rather than Saturday. Why? Sunday is known as the Lord's Day. It's the day the Lord Jesus rose from the dead. So they begin to meet on the Lord's Day. They keep what we now call Sunday. How do Christian people relate about the Sabbath, about the rest day? I think there's three main options that are around, and happy to be corrected or take questions. The first one is to continue the seventh day Sabbath, which obviously would be where the Seventh Day Adventists get their name. They continue to meet and have a Sabbath day on the Saturday. The second is to use, or to say it's got to be the first day of the week as a Christian Sabbath, although I cannot find anywhere in the New Testament where the New Testament writers call the first day of the week the Lord's Day. I can't find anywhere where they call it the Sabbath. And then the third one is to say there's no more special days. Every day belongs to Jesus. One thing the New Testament does say is this: if you're a follower of Jesus, you work out what you want to do on this with your conscience, work out with your conscience, and then don't let anyone else judge you about this, and don't make anyone else's life a misery. So, for example, in Romans chapter 14, Apostle Paul writing to Christians in Rome, he expects that there'll be disagreement over secondary issues like this. And what does he say? Just give other people some space. Okay? So in Romans 14:5, he says, one person considers one day more sacred than another, another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. So that's okay. Let me pull this together and there may be some questions. The idea of the Sabbath pointed to spiritual rest in Jesus. It's St. Augustine who said a very famous quote. He said, speaking of God, you have made us and directed us towards yourself, and our heart is restless until we find rest in you. Our heart is restless until we find rest in you. What's the idea? God's goal has always been that people would know him and be able to enjoy him and find spiritual rest. And it's what Jesus has done means it's all of God's generosity. It's done, it's finished, accept it, and you can stop striving and working and worrying and rest in him and know you're acceptable to God. And that's the idea of spiritual rest. And the promise that one day that'll be completely fulfilled in the promise of the new creation and the promise of eternal life. That's what spiritual rest means. Now, what does that look like now in terms of physical rest? Well, I'd put it to you that there's a pattern built into creation. And I think even the world that doesn't acknowledge Jesus sees that. There's a pattern of work and rest. The Bible's pattern is 6 days work and one day's rest. I figure if you can get 2 days rest, even better. Okay, even better. We're in the lucky country. Let me speak now. If you're a follower of Jesus, I guess there's a sharp edge here. Me speaking on not overworking, it's a bit like me speaking on hair care. I feel just a little hypocritical. I need to say that in case my wife ever hears this recording. Okay. All right, so let me launch in with considerable hypocrisy. If we can't take a day off as a follower of Jesus, we need to actually examine why. There's something wrong. Now, is it that we're driven by greed, that extra 14% of work? I mean, ironically, take a day off, the other six are much more productive, but it could be greed. Or it may also be anxiety. If I don't work all the time, what will happen? What will my boss think? Or what will happen to my business or my practice or whatever it is? It's actually an act of faith. Or as my dear wife says, the job of Jesus is already taken. He can run the world. It's an act of faith or trust to know that I can take a day off, enjoy the good things of God, do what refreshes me, and God will look after me. And so choose the day. I think there's flexibility there. It's to do things that will refresh you, whether that's relationships, exercise, you name it, whatever it is, and to be able to enjoy that. So spiritual rest in what Jesus has done, confidence, joy, rest, and then physical rest. And then if I could say, even the world that doesn't follow Jesus is beginning to see this more and more. What was interesting, I found in this book by this lady, Katrina Onstad, I couldn't pick up in the interview, I shouldn't say anything kind of about Jesus. I don't think she's a follower of Jesus. But she gave some interesting ideas of who's... The pendulum is beginning to swing back. She said, for example, recently in France, France passed legislation that enshrines the right to, quote, disconnect on weekends and evenings. The right to turn your phone off so your employer can't ring you, email you, whatever it is. Google Ireland tested a program called Dublin Goes Dark, where employees turned over their phones at the end of each workday. Now, that would be a test, wouldn't it? Could you hand in your phone at the end of each work? Okay. And then Volkswagen implemented a program for some workers where servers stopped sending emails between 6:15 and 7 a.m. It's just the world's... There are signs that the world's beginning to realize we need to work and rest. And that's the pattern that's built into creation.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.